Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Seahawks tight end Will Disley going to join us in an hour right here on Jake and Stacy. Until then, we're fighting, Jake. We're not really fighting, but we're at a bit of a disagreement about
we're throwing furniture. Are getting turned over.
Oh, I'm throwing furniture. There is at least two chairs in here I could throw if I wanted to. They have wheels. That's probably how I'd choose to do it, but I would still do it. No, we're having a bit of a debate here, and you know what? Listeners joining in too, and I love that from you guys. Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710. It started with a question. It started with a single question. Is getting Julio Jones to Seattle the way you take advantage of the Seahawks Super Bowl window? And Jake said, you need to be all in. If you want to win every year and you want to get to the postseason, like, yeah, do exactly what you've been doing because this has been your result. If you want to get to a Super Bowl, you need more because you haven't even made the NFC Championship in, I think you said 6 years, right?
Since the
2014 season. Yes, in six seasons. And since your Super Bowl loss, I think you've won two or three playoff games. It's been an abysmal postseason record for a team that is one of the winningest regular season teams. There is an issue there. Both Jake and I agree with it. And right now we're talking about how you take advantage of that window. I am not for sacrificing too much down the road to win now because I think that those sacrifices you're making also affect you now, particularly if they're on defense. I don't know that you can afford to get worse on defense.
Well, but where are you going to get worse on defense? That's the question. Making a move for somebody like Julio Jones, for example, right? It doesn't mean that you're going to cut somebody on this roster. There's ways that you can manipulate the cap to get that contract under control. There's already a report out there from Brady Henderson of ESPN saying that his understanding is that the Seahawks are going to remain interested in this particular situation, but that they would prefer, as I'm sure many other teams, but they really would not get interested in the deal unless the Atlanta Falcons were willing to eat some of Julio Jones' salary. How much would they need? I don't know. Five to make it five, 7 million, right? Who knows how much that they would feel like needed to be split between the Falcons and the Seahawks. But I look at this decision, and you know, we're talking about Julio Jones, but to me, you know, you could throw in a guy like Stephon Gilmore, and it's the same conversation. Stephon Gilmore, his cap hit is $16 million. It's $1 million more than Julio Jones. So everybody that's advocating for Stephon Gilmore, that's still going to be a tight squeeze. That's still going to be a move, Stacy, that would, in fact, put your team in a really unique spot. You would have to give up draft capital or a player to get a guy like Stephon Gilmore, and are we comfortable with that? My point being is that it's not about the player right now for me. What it is the general question of asking if you are comfortable with this team taking the same approach where they have made risky moves down the road. They have made trades. They have done different things. But overall, what they've put together over the last, I would say, four seasons at least, is a team that's a consistent winner, but not necessarily a roster that has the absolute ability, front runner ability to go and win a Super Bowl. You're going to need high-level talent, whether that's through the draft, whether that's through, you know, going out and making that one extra splash piece, Stacy. I don't care if it puts you in a tough spot down the road, because your window is so very clear right now.
I feel you. Like, I completely agree with you, and I agree with you on two fronts. I agree with you that you are in a window that is closing because of the age of your two biggest stars, Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner, and the fact that their contracts do not extend over or through 2023, I think. Maybe 24 for Wagner, I'm not sure.
2023, yes.
I agree with you on two fronts. You're in a window that's closing, and there is a bad pattern here of losing in the postseason after winning so much in the regular season. And you should be better than that. I agree with you on both fronts. And I also agree with you that getting to a Super Bowl means making short-term and potentially sometimes long-term sacrifices. Completely agree on that. I would not pay $15.3 million for Julio Jones. It's not because I don't think Julio Jones will this upcoming season, no matter where he is, be one of the better receivers in football. And he has been potentially the best receiver in football for the last decade. Julio Jones is phenomenal and will make any team he is on, whether it's Atlanta, probably won't be, or somewhere else, a better team, period. And I think he would make the Seahawks a better team. I wouldn't do it. Because I don't think you were a Julio Jones removed from a Super Bowl last year. Your problem last year wasn't that you didn't have Julio Jones. It was that you didn't know who you wanted to be on offense. And it caused a complete second half collapse. It was Russell Wilson playing the worst football of his life. It was Brian Schottenheimer and Pete Carroll never seeming to agree, whether it's on a fourth down decision or on how often they want to use Chris Carson or on when they want to target down the field despite two high looks that you're getting, not adjusting there. It was... Everything was wrong about the mindset. You were of two different minds. You lost your identity. I don't know what was happening with you. It wasn't that you didn't have one more star receiver. What I worry is that this is a team that needs to fix that, not invest even more money on offense. If you want to invest on the offense, get an offensive lineman. Get a center in there. I know I'm saying something you completely agree with, and I want to make that clear, but I don't think Julio Jones is your missing piece. You don't have a missing piece. If you do, it's going to be on offense. It will be Gilmore. It'll be a corner. That's your weakest group by far. What I worry is getting Julio Jones basically just makes you the 2016 Falcons again, a team that can potentially be one of the better teams on offense.
But did the 2016 Falcons get to a Super Bowl?
And they lost the Super Bowl because they choked.
It wasn't just choking.
It was letting who come back and beat them. You cannot win a Super Bowl with a defense that is abysmal. You can't. You can win it with a defense that's middle of the road, and there's this false narrative that Kansas City had the number one offense and a horrible defense. But you know what? I'm pretty sure that year they were one of the top team in sacks, still had a really solid pass rush. They still had the pieces. They were good enough. And I'm worried that adding Julio Jones means that you are not good enough on defense. For $15.3 million, you lower that price, and I'm open to it.
You lower the price,
lower
you're
the
open
price,
to it,
I'm
sure.
Changing my mind. This whole diatribe leaves.
He's a player that makes you incredibly dynamic. He makes you incredibly dynamic.
Why can't you be dynamic
offense
now?
Well, you can. Of course you can.
And
we're
why
not
do
talking
you need
about
Julio?
Can they. Because he can take you to another level. Are you saying that Dwayne Eskridge can be Julio Jones?
I'm saying, what are you willing to give up to get Julio?
I'm saying that what I'm willing to give up is a second-round pick. If I know that Julio Jones...
it's going to be more than that. What about financially? How are you going to make room for Julio? How are you going to make room? You have $7 million in cap space. How are you going to make room?
They're out there in the market begging, lying to people that they got a first-round offer.
I know, but who... Fine. Where are you finding the money... The remaining money for Julio, let's say that they don't lower it, because you and I are both 1,000% on the same page if they lower that cost. Both you and me are like, yes, team, bring Julio here. If it's 15.3, if the Seahawks say, you know what? We are taking the Jake Heaps approach. We are all in for this year's Super Bowl or bust. Let's take the Rams approach. Les, you're onto something down there in LA. We're giving you whatever it takes. And so now we've just got to kind of create cap space. What do you do?
Right now, you're at $7 million right now. Jamal Adams, his deal gets done. That opens up a good amount of cap space. And then you've got a decision to make on whether you want to restructure a Russell Wilson or a Bobby Wagner to some degree to make room for that. That is something that would end up happening, or that you would have to end up doing along the way in order to make that happen. So, look, I'm not sitting here hard advocating for Julio Jones. I want to make that very clear. I am uncomfortable about $15 million for Julio Jones.
And you've said that before.
I have. And in this conversation, though, the reason why we are talking about this is because of the window that you have now. If the team evaluates and says that it's Julio Jones, or if it's Stephon Gilmore, whoever the case may be, to me, it is all about how are you going to maximize your window now? What are you waiting for? Right? And I'm not saying that they're not being aggressive. They haven't made good moves up to this point. But to the idea that you got to be conservative, or that you've got to look at this in a long-term scope, Pete Carroll isn't going to be here forever. Russell Wilson hopefully is here for his remainder of his career. Bobby Wagner, who knows how much longer he will have playing at middle linebacker. It's really hard to play past your 30s at an extremely high level here in the NFL. Bobby Wagner has continued to do it. You're always going to wonder, 1 year from now, what is he going to look like? That's just the way it is with middle linebackers. Maybe he's the next Ray Lewis, and he can continue to play at a high level
for many, many
years.
Then I probably don't want to restructure his deal.
Yeah, then you probably don't. But the reality is you have to work with what you know now. And I think that that is the biggest equation in this. And if I'm Pete Carroll, that's my mindset. And you talked about the ways that you can maximize your team and your talent now. It also brings us to this unique position where looking at process, looking into philosophy, looking into strategy, because in the last six seasons, you have not been able to get to the NFC Championship game. You are in a group of teams that you don't want to be associated with in terms of the teams that have not gotten to an NFC Championship game in the same span. It's basically like the NFC East and one other random horrible team in the NFC, and it's the Seattle Seahawks. They don't add up. It doesn't make sense. And so for this team, they have reevaluated their offensive philosophy, brought in Shane Waldron. They've upgraded with Gabe Jackson. They've upgraded with Dwayne Eskridge. They've upgraded with Gerald Everett. I feel very excited about what they've done with this team. Now the question is, do they feel like they have enough? Do they have the horses? Do they have what's in place to go attack and go win another Super Bowl? That, to me, is what matters. I don't care about repercussions down the road if it means a Super Bowl win.
Look, I'll say this. Again, one thing we both agree on is that they have a Super Bowl window that's closing. So how do you actually get there? Right? What do you do to get there? Now, we're at odds right now about whether potentially Julio could be that piece. But ultimately, both of us agree that there is a problem. There is a gap. There is some kind of reason that you have not been able to get back there. Yes, it's because it's hard, but other teams have done it. Other teams since have been able to get back there. And there's also a discrepancy. It doesn't make sense why you are so successful in the regular season. You have one season in Russell Wilson's career when they haven't had double-digit wins, and you haven't been able to be successful essentially since your Super Bowl loss in the postseason. You got to figure it out. All right, it is 12:15. That means it's time for Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
With Jake and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
All right, first down to you, Jake. What surprised you about where Pro Football Focus placed the Seahawks in their NFL running back rankings?
Actually, a lot higher than what I thought it would be. I thought it would be towards the back end of the NFL, but Pro Football Focus actually had the Seahawks ranked middle of the pack. They had them at 16. And the reason why that surprises me is because the depth is not great. Past Chris Carson, the depth there, Rashad Penny, you look at DJ Dallas, Travis Homer, it's not a group that I feel extremely confident in, and it completely changed the complexion of your team if Chris Carson is not healthy. So therefore, what it did show me is how much they value what Chris Carson is as a running back, how much of a stud he actually is, and how much he really means to this offense. The other question that it then popped into my mind is Rashad Penny. Can this be a year that he can stay fully healthy? Can this be a year where he can be an adequate backup in the NFL and flash and show the promise and the talent of being a first-round running back? That, to me, is going to be a big part of the equation. I think Chris Carson's going to be a cowbell. This is going to be a workhorse. They will give him the majority of the carries, but it is going to be vital that when you have Rashad Penny come in and be involved in the running game, that he steps up, that he is able to really maximize his potential this year, and he's got a lot of motivation to do that. The Seahawks did not pick up his fifth-year option. He will be a free agent after this year, and he definitely has a lot to prove.
Second down. All right, Stacey, I'm going to need you to put your GM hat on for this one. And this is a tough question.
Great.
If you were John Schneider, would you plan for Russell Wilson being gone in 2022?
Now, I'll say this. If you're GM, you always want to plan for any possibility. You want to plan this year for Russell Wilson potentially, and I'm knocking on wood, being injured. You want to plan for your backup situation. You want to plan for what happens if DK or Tyler or any one of these guys get injured. You've always got like plans A through Z going on. What I will add is I am not planning and moving forward with action as though Russell Wilson is not going to be here. Because how do you replace Russell Wilson next year if he's gone? I fully anticipate, if this team doesn't play well this year, us to be right back into this conversation all over again, as annoying as it is for so many people. But if I'm John Schneider, I want Russell Wilson here. Because if I'm John Schneider, I recognize that unless we tanked, we're not in the upper first round to get a promising young quarterback. And the reason that it is always a story when you talk about Russell Wilson that he was in the third round, or when you talk about Tom Brady that he was in the sixth round, or Richard Sherman, a corner, that he was in the fifth round, is because it is hard to find Hall of Fame caliber talent in later rounds. You can absolutely do it. It is less common to do, and that's why it's always a little point of trivia, a little fun fact about someone's career. That's where Seattle is going to have to find a quarterback. It is so much easier to just stick with the one you have. And so I am aware of the possibility, but I'm counting on him being here in 2022 because his contract's through 23. And I'm also kind of counting on him being a guy that, unlike some other guys in the league, I don't anticipate would hold out.
Third down. Jake, what news is good news when it comes to Julio Jones?
What is the good news about him? The longer that he remains on the market, it is extremely positive news for the Seahawks. Reason why? The asking price goes down. The willingness to figure out a way to move Julio Jones goes up. And the Seahawks, they're not going to be jumping all over the idea of taking on $15.3 million onto their cap this season. But what would really intrigue them is if they only had to give up a second-round pick, and the Atlanta Falcons would be willing to take on that salary. So to me, that it would be an extremely positive move for the Seahawks. It's a win-win in that situation. And if you're a Seahawks fan who wants to have Julio Jones here on this roster, then you better hope that the market goes really cold for Julio Jones at the beginning of the month, and it's going to force the Atlanta Falcons to really have to compromise what their original thought was.
Fourth down. All right, Jake, if the Seahawks don't get Julio Jones, what's another move they can make to improve their Super Bowl odds this year?
Another move that they can make to improve their Super Bowl odds is, obviously, people have been talking about and comparing, well, if we don't want Julio Jones, then let's get Stephon Gilmore. Gilmore at the cornerback position would be more valuable to this defense than any other position. I do believe that Stephon Gilmore would be a great addition. He would be in a great upgrade. But I do also think that he would command a lot more capital. I don't think that that Bill Belichick is going to let Stephon Gilmore walk for anything less than a first-round pick. I just really can't see it happening. And I have a hard time seeing that Stephon Gilmore actually, in fact, is traded from the New England Patriots. I know there was a lot of talk about it. I have a hard time seeing it happen. It would be an incredible get for them, even though he has a $16 million cap hit. You would have the same worries about financially how you would make that work. But the other thing that I'm going to throw out there to you guys is that the defensive line, I still believe that this is a group that can add to its unit. And I'm going to give you three names that stand out to me. Two names in the interior, one name out on the edge. How about Justin Houston out of Indianapolis? I know that there was Aldon Smith. We don't know what's going on with Aldon Smith right now in his legal situation. It definitely makes you worried and concerned that you're going to have a Quentin Dunbar situation all over again. Why not go with the sure thing in Justin Houston, a guy 32 years old but has been consistent, has performed at a high level, and has been a guy that's still been able to get to the quarterback even at this age? Or you could look at the interior. Sheldon Richardson. Yes, the same Sheldon Richardson that you traded for and gave up a first-round pick. He is currently on the market, 30 years old. He had a very productive year last year, can get interior pressure. And an outlier name out there, some people have talked about Geno Atkins. A name that I think would be better than Atkins at this point would be Jarrell Casey. Came off of a torn bicep this last year, missed the majority of the year, but previous to that, he has been a consistent player, a consistent pass rusher in the interior of defenses. Geno Atkins' production has significantly dropped off in the last couple of years.
Now, Jake, you know we love you.
Really?
You know this.
I don't think I know that.
I'm looking here at the Mac and Jack's text line, and you are being called out for saying Chris Carson is going to be the cowbell.
I know. I knew right when I said it.
You know what? We know what you meant. We know you meant Bell.
Why can't I find the evidence?
I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, look, I'm going to believe it when I hear it. I'm going to believe it when I hear it. I haven't found it yet, but we're picking up what you're putting down, right?
That's because I hit the dump bump button from all the way over here.
That's exactly right.
So I've erased the evidence. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really don't know what you're talking about. I said Chris Carson's going to be their workhorse. That's what I said.
That's exactly what you said. All right. The team, formerly known as the Cleveland Indians, is going to be changing their name, obviously. There are a couple names that are popular with fans so far. I personally love one of them, but it's also brought them a ton of bad luck in the past. I'll tell you what it is next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Look, Jake, I don't want to put you on blast. You know that we're friends, and I would never leave you out there, you know, for people to make fun of. And really what this is it's just kind of appreciation. It's an appreciation of the little intricacies of Jake Heaps. So in our last segment, Four Down Territory, great segment. Jake does an amazing job fielding three questions from all of us. And he had
Don't forget your question.
And my
Stacey.
Important question makes four. And Jake had a question about he was talking about the running back situation. This is what he had to say about Chris Carson.
I think Chris Carson's going to be a cowbell. This is going to be a workhorse.
And immediately, this cut is what I started thinking of.
I got a fever. And the only prescription is more cowbell.
And you know what I'm going to start saying this year when I feel like Chris Carson isn't getting enough carries? I'm going to be saying this.
I got a fever. And the only prescription is more cowbell.
More cowbell. More cowbell. That's what this offense needs, Jake. You're so ashamed.
That was completely fabricated. You guys completely doctored that cut.
DJ.
There's no way. There's no way
evidence,
I said
DJ.
That. I said workhorse, DJ.
DJ.
I didn't say Chris
cowbell.
Carson's going to be a cowbell. This is going to be a workhorse.
Wow. Wow.
There was someone that tweeted us like instantly after this happened, Andy Mack, and he said, JT Heaps 9, the master of making up words that closely resemble the right ones. Always close enough that we know what you mean. Hashtag cowbell.
That's what it is. It's not completely making something up. It's just like flipping two words or doing something like jack of all aces and cowbell where you're like, I know exactly what you're trying to say, but it made it even more funny. Like it makes it funnier. All right. On to our actual stories. The Cleveland Indians are getting closer to coming up with a new name. Obviously going to ditch their longtime mascot for perfectly fair reasons. So they're coming up with some new ones. The most popular name amongst fans so far, there are three of them. You've got the Avengers, the Guardians, and the Spiders. Don't forget, Cleveland Spiders still hold the MLB record, which will not be touched, for the most losses in a single season.
So they want them to be named after like the Marvel series?
Apparently.
Cleveland Avengers?
I
Cleveland
don't like
Guardians?
The Avengers. The Cleveland
They're
Avengers.
Terrible. What about Cleveland? Is what are they avenging? What are they guarding? What are they guarding the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Like what's going on? I don't understand. The only thing that makes sense here for the Cleveland organization is the Spiders, because there is history there, and to me that makes a ton of sense. The Avengers? Are you kidding me? What is the mascot going to be, Stacy? Is it going to be Iron Man? Is it going to be Spider Man? What are you going to do?
I don't know. I have no idea. Also, both of those sound like XFL names, and certainly one of them was an XFL name, right?
Yes, yes.
The Guardians. I'm pretty sure
No. It was the Defenders, the DC Defenders. That's right.
Either way, they sound like XFL names. The only one that even makes sense is Spiders, because it literally used to be the name of a baseball team. Not a good baseball team, but a baseball team that existed one time. It's a funny story. DJ's laughing already. What's wrong with spiders? Spiders pretty solid. I think you can have a big mascot, like with spider legs and webbing, and you can have like...
Well,
cotton
now,
candy and popcorn and stuff in the webbing.
Spider-Man
like,
can make an appearance.
Yeah. I feel like they could really roll with this. This can be good for them.
The way that you're describing this makes me feel like there are no good names out there. The Cleveland organization should not be considering any of these three names, but hopefully they have better luck than what the fans have been able to come up with so far. But if I was to give my vote, just because of the history, the Cleveland Spiders would make more sense, but I don't know. I think they're in a tough spot.
Also because of the history, 253 texts in and says, what about Cleveland River Fires?
Cleveland River. Okay. I mean, I don't think, I think you need to go to the drawing board, but sure. I mean, you're trying to make it local to them. I get where you're coming from.
All right. The Seattle Kraken have earned the number two pick in the 2021 NHL Amateur Draft. Take a listen here.
And the winner of the 2021 draft lottery is the Buffalo Sabres.
So the Seattle Kraken will pick number two. They move up from third to second. They will pick higher than the Vegas Golden Knights did in their inaugural draft season. Buffalo retains the top pick for the first time since they did so themselves in 2018.
Now, as Mike Salk said when he was on with us earlier this week, in his column on kind of which direction they should move in with their first pick, meaning like which type of player should they draft, is up on 710sports.com. He said there's no unanimous first overall pick this year. So maybe getting second overall is also just fine.
Yeah, it's also a very good spot to be in when you have multiple options in the way that you want to go. I bet what it does, though, for you, if there is no number one consensus player, is it's going to be reactionary, because what ends up happening at number one, they may take the player that you wanted, right? So for the Kraken, there's going to be a couple players that they're going to have to highlight and really identify who they want and what they want to base their team off of and their style to play. But this is a great opportunity. It's very exciting to see who is going to be the prized player in this process for them as they go through with the number two pick, Stacey, with what they go through in the expansion draft. I'm very excited to learn more about this team and obviously thrilled that they have the number two pick, despite how angry Twitch fans are out there, DJ, that you were experiencing. This is an exciting deal.
You want to remind people why they were so angry?
They were literally just mad that their team, that their favorite team in the lottery, was not, didn't have higher odds than an expansion
team
that
anyway.
Has one player under contract, and they are very salty about it.
Whatever. You didn't. Seattle had the third best odds, got the second overall pick. It's not like your random team that had lower odds had an equal chance. It didn't. Get over it. I'm okay being hated. We discussed this earlier. Would you rather have your sports team be hated? The answer is absolutely yes. If your team isn't hated, they're probably not very good, because you're not making anyone mad. Last story here. This news, obviously, everyone was talking about it yesterday. We didn't get a chance to get to it, but we have to touch on it today. Coach K, legendary Coach K, will retire after the 2021-22 season. Weirdly enough, we had Titus and Tate on with us, and they had a prediction about that.
You know when people say give them their flowers before they're gone?
Yes.
Coach K is going to sniff every flower. Every single one of them. It's going to be the grossest thing I've ever seen. But he's going to sniff all those flowers. And I will say, the time is now. This will be Coach K's last season in college basketball.
Wow.
And he will get the farewell tour.
Wow.
He will get the Nike press tour. But he will have one last ride, and this ride is going to be long. It's going to be arduous. It's going to hurt me a lot.
It's going to hurt him a lot. I love those two guys, and hopefully we'll be able to have them on soon down the road. It was great having them on during March Madness. But for me, when you look at Coach K and what he's been able to do, obviously an incredible career, an incredible run, absolutely the best. I mean, it's him and Dean Smith in college basketball. And so it's incredible to see what Coach K has been able to do. And all good things come to an end. I mean, he is one of the greatest coaches in our lifetime. I mean, spans decades here. But I think that with Coach K, I believe it's, for me, it's a little odd to see him go on this one-year tour and say that he's going to retire after the season. I've always found that to be a hard thing because you're leaving your team in flux. I don't know if he believes that he's buying the Duke basketball team more time. He's buying the university more time to find the adequate replacement, the right replacement. If he's doing himself, if he's doing his recruits a favor, if he's doing his the kids that committed to him a favor by staying one more year, I'm not sure what it is. Or is it just the accolation that the accolades that Titus and Tate are referring to there? I'm not exactly sure, but it's always strange to me when you have a prominent coach like this who's in college basketball, who's going to ride it out for one more year. It's a tough thing to it's a tough thing to replace. It's a tough thing to also sell to recruits. Hey, come to Duke basketball. We're just fine.
All right, what did the Seahawks need to do in order to put a bow on their offseason? We've got three ideas. We'll tell you what they are next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Seahawks tight end Will Disley going to join us in 15 minutes. You're not going to want to miss this one. Our first chance to talk to him this offseason. Before we get to that, though, let's continue talking about the Seahawks offseason, specifically the moves that they can make to just kind of put a bow on everything. I think we've all agreed that they're not completely done. Really, no team is. It's still relatively early in the offseason. There's going to be more moves made ahead of training camp in a later phase of free agency. There's going to be additional trades made. I'm not saying they're happening for the Seahawks. I'm saying that no team is fully constructed yet. That work all continues. So, Jake, we were thinking of some moves that the Seahawks can make in order to put a bow on their offseason, and you had a couple ideas. Tell me about one of them.
All right. So I'm going to live in the world of realism here, in the sense of I'm not going to say that a big trade would be the perfect way to put a bow on their offseason for Julio Jones or Stephon Gilmore. I'm going to live within the premise that that is not going to happen. So one of the moves that I think obviously would put a bow on their offseason is getting Jamal Adams' deal done. That is number one in terms of where they currently are right now. That has to get done. Whether it's now, whether it's just before training camp, it doesn't matter, but that will be the perfect bow to have to their offseason as they lock up Jamal Adams, a superstar talent, superstar player, a impact player on defense. For the foreseeable future, I think that that will be number one.
All right, and you also have another move on here.
Yeah, the other move that I think is very quiet out there, everybody focuses on the cornerback market and focuses on the cornerback position for the Seahawks. I understand that. I get it. It's uncomfortable because you have a lot of unproven players at that position. The Seahawks, guess what? They kind of like it. They like it because they love the guys that they have there in the sense of their attitudes. DJ Reed, Trey Brown, you look at Akilah Witherspoon. These are guys that are very confident in themselves and have something to prove and are going to show up with a chip on their shoulder, ready to show that they can win the job. You look at Pierre Desir. He's had success in his career here in the NFL, and it's just been kind of up and down, especially his last year with the New York Jets. But he also had three interceptions last year. So this isn't a guy that it just isn't a good football player that you were just able to get for depth purposes. This is a good, solid player who has experience and at his best could surprise people. So they've been able to create very good depth. And we all forget about Trey Flowers, right? I mean, poor guy at this point. But I think that, you know, he's had flashes in different moments, but they're going to have a ton of competition there. So the area that I really think that they can add to, Stacey, is that defensive tackle position. Making LJ Collier, making Rasheem Green a three technique, or having them play more three technique than anything else makes me nervous. I don't think that that is necessarily a good position to be in terms of the run game. They need to find somebody better with Puna Ford.
Why with those guys in particular is it not a good fit for you?
Because I don't think that they're stout enough in the run game. Okay. I think that they are good five technique defensive ends in the run game, but But being in the interior, Stacey, that's a whole different ball game. You know, going up and mashing against centers and guards, that's a whole different level of physicality instead of dealing with tackles and tight ends. So I think that that's a big reason why I feel like for them, adding somebody like Sheldon Richardson or Jarrell Casey at the defensive tackle position to be a backup to Puna Ford, I think would be an excellent addition for this defense. You lose out on Jaron Reed, Sheldon Richardson would be an excellent, excellent addition. And he's on the market right now for a reason, not because of his production. His production's actually been pretty good. It's his age more than anything else, and also the price point in which he thinks he can still get. It's way past that point for him. And if he's willing to come to grips with reality that his price point is not as high, or he's not going to be able to get as much money as he thinks he is, I think the Seahawks could get a nice steal there.
Yeah, when I think of ways that they can add a bow onto the offseason, and Pete Carroll would tell you, like, we're never done adding, we're never done moving. So I say that as just a metaphor for this purpose. But when I think of how they can add a bow, any additions I think of, like 1 through 3, are on defense. It feels like that's part of the roster that's still being constructed. I don't know if it's because you just have untested talent there, or if it's because you genuinely have holes. It sounds like up front you're saying, look, they genuinely have holes there. Personnel-wise, they don't have a true interior guy to put next to Puna. That loss of Jaron Reed is still a factor. It's still there. It's still going to be a problem for you. I automatically went to corner, so it's interesting to hear you say, look, I'm curious to see what this group can be. I've got, you know, some good expectations. They're not sky high, but I think this team likes that people are doubting that group. You also had, though, an offensive note here.
Yeah. Do you want to know what else would be a perfect bow to this offseason, given how the offseason started and all the drama that has unfolded that we were all talking about and dealing with and the Seahawks were dealing with? How about hearing positive reviews of Russell Wilson, Shane Waldron, their relationship, how Russell Wilson looks, them talking positive about one another and how it's all coming together, and the offense during mandatory minicamp when we know that the players are going to show up and when they're going to be there, that we're hearing great things about this offense, about this relationship between quarterback and OC, and it's got everybody feeling good heading into training camp. That, to me, would also put a perfect bow on this offseason, given all the drama that unfolded earlier on. That's something that I really want to hear. That's something that I want to be able to witness at mandatory minicamp, seeing this offense, seeing Russell Wilson really being able to have great command of the offense, and that his chemistry with DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Gerald Everett, you name it, the new guys, Dwayne Eskridge, that everything is very, very positive and exciting.
All right. The NFL has already hosted games in Mexico City at Tottenham Stadium. They are looking at hosting games potentially in another international city. I'll tell you what that is coming up in NFL headlines at 1:15. Before we get to any of that, though, we're going to be talking with Seahawks tight end Will Disley. See how his offseason has been and his expectations for this tight end group this season. That's coming your way next.